All right, good morning, everyone. The time is now 10:01, and we will start the public meeting for the District of Columbia Board of Ethics and Government Accountability. My name is Tamika Collier. I am chairperson of the board. I am here today with all of the sitting board members, Shamari Wade, Norma Hutchinson, and Darren Sobin. So we do have a quorum. I'd ask everyone to take a few minutes and review the agenda before you. And advise of any proposed changes. Hearing no changes, I will entertain a motion to adopt the agenda.
I move to adopt the agenda.
All in favor, signify by saying yes.
Yes.
Any opposed? Great. Moving to the adopting of the April 5th, 2018 meeting minutes, which were in the Dropbox. Are there any amendments, changes to the meeting? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to adopt the April 5th, 2018 meeting minutes as presented.
I move to adopt the April meeting minutes.
All in favor, signify by saying yeah.
Yes.
Any opposed? Great, adoption. Next, we'll move to the report for open government. Mr. Flowers.
Morning, Madam Chairperson, members of the board. So in the 10 days that I've been interim director, things have been fairly uneventful thus far. I hope you'll move swiftly to name a permanent director to the office. So in terms of reporting, since the last meeting, the office received 7 requests for FOIA advice, conducted 3 Open Meeting Act trainings at DCRA, COST, and ABRA. And in terms of cost, Attorney Barton conducted the required OMA trading in that instance. FOIA Express training, the vendor for our citywide FOIA Express system, a FOIA system, Ains, has conducted a significant number of the 16 scheduled trainings at OCTA, which were to be done between March and December. So there's still quite a good number left, but they're kind of spaced out. So Attorney Barton has already taken the training, and both Attorney Cooks and I have signed up for the training. I'll be taking it on May the 8th, which I think is Tuesday. It's kind of ironic because I was involved with selecting this vendor, I guess, 4 years ago. And you know, I do need a refresher on this, no question about it. So I've also followed up with respect to the report that the EOM was considering proposed legislation and regulations to update FOIA. There's still no specifics, but based on my conversations with them, my understanding is that the thrust of the proposal would be to realign the district statute with the federal statute and perhaps update the FOIA fee structure. This has been proposed before. There was no traction the last time. What essentially happened was our statute was aligned with the federal statute, and then the council approved some amendments. I think it's unlikely that they're going to go back to the federal structure, but it remains to be seen. So the new OOG director will have an opportunity to review and weigh in on any proposal, because at this point there is no concrete proposal. Advisory opinions, there have been 2. One is whether, follow up on whether UMT's board's failure to make available to the public an electronic recording of its February 21 Strategic Planning Commission meeting violated the OMA, yes, and they basically produced that. They're right. They subsequently produced this.
They couldn't produce the story.
Okay. So the second one dealt with a resolution of a complaint, and that was whether or not OOG had jurisdiction to resolve a dispute between a pharmacy and customer regarding a prescription. So that was no. Now, I also wanted to note, and I'll discuss this a little later in terms of what WADA has been doing both to assist OGE and to designing the advice database, but also improvements to the website. So discuss that a little later. So in litigation, OOG versus Yates, on March 20, Judge Campbell granted the defendant's motion to alter or amend the court's May 5th order. The order makes clear that the Mayor's Advisory Commission on Community Affairs, MACA, is to provide the OOG at least an additional 1 week's notice of the time, date, location, and draft agenda of any meeting occurring within 12 months of the date of the court's order, and shall publish on the district's central meeting calendar notice of any meeting occurring within 12 months of the date of the order, rather than indefinitely. So pursuant to the court's order, MACA submitted its draft meeting agenda to OOG for review, and the OOG will ensure compliance with the OMA provided to ensure that that MACA complies with the OMA provided the MACA with several recommended changes to the draft agenda. Claudia Barber versus Bega OOG. There's been one new development in this case, and that was, the petitioner Barber filed her opposition to the motion to dismiss, and that motion to dismiss was basically sort of procedural or technical, that it was not filed under the proper, it didn't cite to the proper authority. So the opposition says that the Superior Court has general jurisdiction over all civil actions. It's an APA contested case, and because the court has general jurisdiction, it's proper for the petitioner to request judicial review of the agency decision. So May 11 is the date of the initial scheduling conference. So I guess we'll know more at that time. Doesn't seem like it's going to go away quickly, though. So for informational purposes, I wanted to update the board on two other matters related to OOG. One is website improvements. I've been working with both Mr. Kitab and Attorney Cook to further improve the OOG website. And this is an ongoing process, and to me, it's incremental. Do what we can, a little at a time. So recently, we posted an up-to-date HTML version of the board's rules. This is something that I've certainly wanted to do, and I thought should be on the website. So that, and it was one of the complaints that we received, that there's no guidance on the website as to what rules the board followed in its proceedings. So now that is up, and we're going to include future links to the Word and PDF versions. When I say incremental, we have the HTML version. We just want to put different versions on the website in case someone wants to download the rules in their entirety, which is something you can't even do at dcregs.org at this point. You got to do it chapter by chapter. So we've also begun loading summaries of our advisory opinions. These summaries are searchable. A couple of other agencies that do this, federal OGE does it. I've seen some other ethics commissions that do it, so you don't have to click on the link to determine what the opinion is all about. So we've done it for the first page of summaries, but we're going to continue to do that. And there are some technical things that Mr. Kitab is going to have to examine. For example, the field currently that Octo provides only allows for two lines of the summary, and some of these summaries are at least four or five lines long. It just takes more descriptions.
Mr. Flowers, during our oversight hearing, there was some testimony from public witnesses that questioned the searchability of the website. Are we making any progress on that?
Yeah, I think so. First of all, you know, the two different ways of searching. The one for me that is the simplest is not to rely on anybody's algorithms. You just search what's on the page, which is why these summaries are helpful, because you got a lot more information on the page itself, and you're not relying on a search engine. Octo uses, I think they're using Bing now. When we went through the website and looked at it, we're making some progress. But still, I think there's still a problem with some of the format of some of the documents that do not allow them to be searched. And that's going to be a longer process.
Okay.
So we've also uploaded hard copies of the meeting minutes for the last year. So we're going to continue to do that. And at some point, we'll go back and capture some of the earlier minutes. But that's something we've done. So in conjunction with Octo, we've organized a heading menu and information contained in each tab. And we've since tweaked a few pages on the website to make navigation easier. Now, you'll have to try that yourself to see if you think what we've done is useful for you. One issue that we certainly discussed was the redundancy issue, whether you can get to the same page with different links. And that's sometimes I think it's a matter of personal preference. Potential budget enhancements. We were recently asked by the Council Judiciary Committee whether there were any OOG initiatives to be funded in the upcoming budget. I informed the staff that there was a need to upgrade the computers and replace the printer. Previously, there was a decision on making OOG more visible and known to the public by developing materials for outreach. For example, posters could be placed in government buildings, specifically in locations where public bodies meet, and funds are needed to produce materials for community outreach. Vega, and we did one jointly with OOG as part of the roadshow, designed to inform the public what it is that we do. And at the most recent one, the public seemed to be more interested in hearing about OOG. And I think that's really logical because you're talking about open meetings, which is designed for the public, and then FOIA, which is also designed for the public. So I think it's really important to increase funding so that community outreach efforts can be enhanced. And I believe the committee favorably received that recommendation.
And how much was the enhancement request?
I think it's $40,000.
$40,000. And that would include a printer that's able to print poster quality or publication quality materials and an upgrade in existing.
I see why the shaking yes, so that's the idea.
Thank you, Mr. Kitab. And an upgrade to the three computers.
Two
of them. Okay.
Yeah, I think one is already state of the art.
Right. That's actually was one of my questions, having reviewed the P-card invoices. I knew there were some technology improvements over the last couple of years already. Okay, excellent.
Yeah, I don't have anything further.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I have a question.
The public portion, Mr. Sinjum, you will be able to ask a question then. You will be able to speak during the public portion. Mr. Wolfenbarger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Monthly report regarding the Office of Government Ethics Operations. Recap of the previous month's activities. We opened 3 investigations, closed none. There are currently 26 investigations open, and eight investigations are stayed. One is stayed for a Maryland court fugitive action. One is stayed in D.C. Superior Court regarding an OEA matter. 4 are stayed regarding pending OIG investigations, and 2 are stayed pending OAG False Claims Act civil actions. Publication and reporting obligations. We have no outstanding publication or reporting obligations. We published our quarterly complaint report for the second quarter of fiscal year 18, and we know it was read because it was quoted by the press. We also completed and uploaded our second quarter performance measures into the City Administrator's QuickBase database, which was uploaded into the Dropbox, and you will note that we met or exceeded all of our performance goals for the most recent quarter.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Trainings and outreach attended by staff. Mr. Dow attended DCHR's agency-level administrative training and setting boundaries program over the past couple weeks. And regarding trainings and outreach that was conducted by our staff. Since the date of the last meeting, we conducted or participated in 13 training sessions, considerably more than the 5 before our prior meeting. The trainings consisted of 3 new employee orientations, 2 MSS trainings, and a board and commission training at EOM with a Hatch Act emphasis, 2 Hatch Act trainings at OAG, 2 ethics presentations at DPR, and we participated in donations management training at OPGS, and an ANC legal seminar that was hosted by the Office of the Attorney General. Additionally, I gave a presentation last week at the Department of Behavioral Health to the Coordinating Council on School-Based Mental Health Services, covering some ethical issues that might arise in the course of the Council's initiative, including potential conflicts of interest.
How did the ANC training go? Who gave that one?
Mr. Flowers did.
Mr. Flowers, how did that go?
Let's see. I thought it went well. There was a vocal group of commissioners there. That's for sure. Most of the questions, though, were not ethics related. They were more. They actually asked questions about OOG, that is the FOIA process and the applicability of the Open Meetings Act. And I think, though, most of it dealt with the great weight, whether or not they were given great weight by agencies. So,
did the Attorney General speak there?
He did. He did.
Thank you.
Mr. Flowers, you touched on a point that I wanted to raise regarding training for both offices. I have been a strong proponent of public outreach. I think the idea of the roadshows done by both offices is a great idea, and I hope that you will continue them in terms of the public outreach versus focusing on, you know, just agency trainings.
Yep, absolutely. Next item on my report is advisory opinions advice. Informal advice, approximately 105 were issued since our last meeting, which is significantly up from the 51 reported at the last meeting. Note that this includes approximately 50 calls concerning financial disclosure statement filings. More than 400 FDS IT inquiries were received into our automated mailbox and forwarded to Octo for resolution. Formal advice requests, we have received no formal advice requests since the last meeting, and as Mr. Flowers touched upon earlier, we have been working closely with Mr. Katab regarding the development of a new OGE advice database. We met with him on Monday, April 30th, to discuss requirements in a little greater detail, and the development is going pretty well, I believe, so far.
Would this be the same type of database that OOG currently uses?
Slightly different. Their case will do also case management. The OOG do case management system beside the advice itself. Theirs will maintain the advice and any transactions towards that advice between OOG and the client.
And have you evaluated their existing case management system? I know that's been an issue.
Yeah, I don't believe that it's as robust as we need for our operations. We have been working very closely with a company called Scout. They have now completed the demo system for us to use, which was created based on the workflows that I gave them about a month or so ago. They have created temporary IDs for our staff members to begin going in and using it to get a feel for how you would enter a new complaint, how you would document investigative activity to see if we believe it will suit our needs. And they just gave us that access either Tuesday or Wednesday. So our investigation of that system is still ongoing.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Next up is ethics legislation, comprehensive code of conduct. The council has proposed adding a subtitle to the Budget Support Act that will include procurement lobbying and the types of matters requiring registration with our office. And Mr. Grimaldi can fill you in on the specifics of the latest iteration of that proposal. Rulemaking. The 30-day comment period.
Is he going to fill us in?
Oh, go ahead.
I'm hesitant to provide a whole lot of detail on the subject of the subtitle because it is set for markup tomorrow by the committee. So in other words, the public hasn't really seen anything of it, and I don't think it is a good thing for us to be discussing. What's been a very robust back and forth between our staff and the committee staff on the subtitle. I will say that in terms of the subject matters that would be addressed, it will represent sort of a picking and choosing from the bills that were the subject of the public hearing back in November. There was Council Member Allen's bill on the frequency of lobbyist activity reporting, the frequency of that. Council Member Che's bill on amending the definitions in the Ethics Act on administrative decision and legislative action, and some borrowing from some of the provisions in the CCC. But other than, you know, that sort of general overview, I'm very hesitant to say anything more. And on the CCC itself, I can say that now that we're at May 3rd, there was no markup on the CCC in April, which was the last we'd heard. I'm told by the committee director and legislative council that all hope is not lost. They're going to get back to it after the budget. And in practical speaking, you know, that's going to take them through, what, July when they get the BSA done and then in the Budget Request Act. So it looks like they'll get back to it over the summer with a markup in the fall. So that's the most I could tell you.
With respect to the procurement subtitle and the BSA, I don't know, Mr. Grimaldi or Mr. Wolfenbarger, have we been asked for whether we believe it would have a financial impact?
Yes.
We've been asked?
We've been asked that.
Is there an answer that we can share publicly?
No.
Okay. Good enough. Let's move on.
Okay. Next item up is the rulemaking, the 30-day comment period for the proposed and emergency rulemaking that was adopted at the board's last meeting will expire on May 5th. As you recall, that rulemaking adopts procedures for informal show cause hearings to be used in conjunction with our ministerial schedule of fines and revises the schedule of fines to include a specific reference to the statutory or regulatory provision for which the fine is being imposed. To date, we have received no comments in connection with that rulemaking. Budget. Our budget oversight hearing was held before the Council's Committee on the Judiciary and Public Safety on Friday, April 13th. We are optimistic that the committee favorably received our testimony and anticipate modest budget enhancements. We have also continued to hold monthly budget meetings with OCFO. Staffing. We have two positions that are currently vacant, an attorney advisor position and our proposed new investigative auditor position. I was heavily engaged in discussions with DCHR last week regarding both the investigative auditor position description and our new compliance specialist position description, which DCHR finally certified last week and has been uploaded to the Dropbox for review. I'm also pleased to introduce you to Denise Kaiser.
Morning.
She accepted our compliance specialist position and joined us on Monday, April 30th. I also uploaded Denise's resume to the Dropbox for your review. I believe she has a wealth of experience, both from a legal and an investigative standpoint, makes it a very good fit for our agency. Denise has been working closely this week with Asia on FDS issues, but we will not hesitate to bring on additional temporary staff if needed over the next few months to get us through both FDS filing season and the next lobbyist filing season in July. And lastly, the attorney advisor position closed 1 week ago on Thursday, April 26th, and we will be scheduling interviews with the strongest candidates next week. I was originally somewhat concerned about the qualifications of the pool that we were receiving. But I received a second batch of candidates that I guess were filed probably in the last week or so, and there are several very strong candidates. So I'm excited that we're going to be able to find somebody that will really help improve our staff.
Excellent.
I want to go back to an issue that Councilmember Allen raised regarding FTEs.
Mm-hmm.
He was adamant, and he is probably correct, that based on the BSA, OGE has 12.5 FTEs. I want to make sure, and I know we have been told by A1 and everyone else that we are fine, but have we resolved the issue of how many FTEs that OGE has versus OOG has, and that we can fill all of these positions that we want to fill without violating anything in the BSA?
It is my understanding we will not have any problems, that has all been ironed out.
Okay.
Litigation.
Oh. I'm sorry, I want to jump in and strike a staffing note, this being my penultimate board meeting. I am formally announcing my retirement effective the 23rd of next month. In case anybody's counting, that's about 50 and a half days from now.
We will, I'm sure, find some way to soldier on, although it doesn't seem clear to me right now, Mr. Grimaldi.
I'm sure you will.
Thanks for that.
We will plan all appropriate honorifics for your departure. We receive that news with sadness, but understanding. Right, Chairwoman? Chair?
No.
It's always rejected.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
You overrule them.
Right, that's up for discussion. We'll close the session.
Table that.
Litigation, status of pending cases. Garen Price, Mr. Price has filed his brief. The court granted the government's request for an extension to file its brief, which was originally due on Tuesday, March 20th, 2018, and the government filed its brief on Wednesday, May 2nd, which was just yesterday, per the court's online system. I was looking at it last night. Charlene Dickens, case number 17-CV-1027, FDS designation appeal. The petition was dismissed by the Court of Appeals on March 2nd, 2018. Edwin Adokwe, also an FDS designation appeal. The dismissal of the petition was announced by Judge Holman in D.C. Superior Court on February 9th, but the
Do we have a basis for the dismissal? Did Judge Holman state it?
I don't recall. Mr. Rogers, do you recall?
No, it was just a docket entry.
Just dismissed.
We're actually waiting. I think we're waiting for the order.
We're waiting for the order. And it's like he announced it from the bench, and there's an entry in the system that has been dismissed, but the actual order has still not been filed.
Okay.
Larry Hicks, this is an enforcement action filed to reduce the board's $20,000 fine imposed on Mr. Hicks to judgment. The board imposed the fine in February of 2014 after a contested hearing. His appeal to Superior Court was dismissed. The Superior Court dismissed the enforcement action without prejudice at the government's request. Mr. Grimaldi has assembled the record so that the action can be refiled. Claudia Barber versus Vega/OOG. Mr. Flowers earlier addressed that particular matter and indicated that May 11, 2018 is the date of the initial scheduling conference for that civil action. Rashawn French versus Vega. Mr. French is appealing the imposition of a $600 ministerial fine. He filed his case pro se on April 6th. And the last matter is Jay Dillon versus Vega, OEE matter number J-0030-18. This is an employment matter involving a separated employee, and a status pre-hearing conference is set for Tuesday, May 8th, 2018. Lobbyist financial disclosure matters. We launched the new public financial disclosure statement e-filing system with the help of Octo. All public FDS notifications have gone out via email. We received 163 bounce backs on the email notification and are sending out hard copies to filers with undeliverable email addresses. The most recent data update we received from Octo indicated there were 3,516 total filers. We had 140 bad addresses, sent out 3,376 emails, 24 were undelivered, 3,352 were received. Of the emails that went out, there have been 592 filers logged into the system, 478 had actually submitted their statements, so 18% of the total population of FDS filers have logged in and 14% have submitted their statements thus far.
Have we had any technical difficulties with the new system?
I don't believe technical difficulties is the word to properly describe the situation. I think there was some issues with the LDAP logins. There was also a couple of issues regarding notifications to folks who did not have DC.gov email addresses and would need to use personal email addresses to access the system. But Asia has been working closely with Mark McDermott to get those resolved on an expedited fashion. And Asia, do you have any specific information you'd want to add on that?
Just as a quick update, this is a new system, and so we don't Vega doesn't have all of the administrative abilities that we had with the old system, so we have to work closely with Octo. I think that once we sent out the notices last week, we spent about a week kind of figuring out what the main login issues, when Brent mentioned LDAP issues. That is an Octo term that I learned. I still don't quite know what it means, but there's some sort of, you know, simple glitch when people are attempting to log into the system. No major technical issues with the functioning of the e-filing system.
And is Octo being responsive?
They are. So the way we've set it up is that we have directed people to email the Vega FDS inbox, and Octo is monitoring a folder within that inbox. And so they just go in periodically throughout the day, and I will place all the login issues in that folder, and they go in throughout the day, and they address those issues, and then they respond directly to the person having the issue from the Vega FDS inbox.
Thank you.
Thank you, Asia. Lobbyist desk review report. Our auditor has completed the desk review for the filing period of January 2018. A total of 405 records of lobbyist activity reports were reviewed under the following criteria. Whether both the lobbyist and the entity registered and filed lobbyist activity reports. Whether the compensation report for both the lobbyist and the lobbying client matched, whether gifts were given to any officials, and if so, did such gifts meet the gift threshold and reporting requirements, were elected officials given any campaign contributions by lobbyists, and if so, did it meet the threshold and reporting requirements, whether all lobbying registrants claiming nonprofit status actually qualify to receive the $200 credit, and what relationships, if any, exist between lobbyists and elected officials. On the registrations and lobbyist activity report filings, out of 405 records reviewed, five organizations either failed to register, failed to file the lobbyist activity report, or both. We're in the process of drafting letters to be sent to the five lobbyists registrants to inform them of the violation and resulting fines of $10 per day, not to exceed $300 per DC Official Code 1-1162.32C. Compensation reports. We identified 24 lobbyists whose compensation reports were inconsistent with the related what the related lobbying clients had reported. We will contact the parties and request more information to reconcile the variance. If we determine that any lobbyist willfully and knowingly violated the reporting requirements, a fine up to $5,000 could be imposed against them pursuant to DC Official Code 1-1162.32A. Political contributions. We identified 82 lobbyists who reported campaign contributions to several officials. We will provide our findings to the Office of Campaign Finance to verify that campaign finance rules are being followed. Nonprofit organizations. Last month, we reported that 29 nonprofit organizations might not be eligible to receive the $200 credit. We're still in the process of determining the appropriate course of action based on the facts in each individual case, because we want to make sure that they truly aren't entitled to the credit before moving to take any action.
Mr. Wolfenberger, Ms. Foster was in charge of lobbyists.
Yes.
When she was here. Who's assumed those responsibilities since she's departed?
Right now, it's kind of a team effort, but the plan is to get Denise educated up on that and to eventually take over both the FDS and the lobbyist programs to free up our attorneys to focus more of their efforts on the investigations.
Very good. You have my full confidence. That was my plan as well when I was the director here.
Okay, non-confidential investigations. First one is 1634-001, Henry Rochelle Wilson. There are no new developments in this case. This is a formal investigation that we discussed at the last meeting involving a former Aussie employee who, before her separation from the district government, failed to submit full, accurate, and complete financial disclosure forms for three consecutive years. Our negotiations with Ms. Wilson were not successful. We believe this is an appropriate case for the director to impose a ministerial fine on the respondent, but our enforcement actions have been delayed due to Asia's need to focus her efforts on ensuring that the new FDS filing system was operational in time for filing season and in responding to FDS-related activities. After the FDS filing season starts winding down on May 5th, we will send Ms. Wilson notice to show cause why the director should not impose a fine against her due to willful failure to file for three consecutive years accurate statements. And following her response, we will make written findings and issue a decision that can be appealed to the board if necessary, consistent with the Ethics Act and the new rulemaking. Next. Non-confidential investigation is Henry Courtney Snowden.
Let me stop you there for just a minute. So I recused myself from this case previously because I was the director at the time that this investigation commenced, and so I just thought it was appropriate that that I do so. So if you're going to be discussing this in any detail at this time, I should probably step out of the room.
Not going to be any substance discussed at this point. There may be some additional information discussed during the executive session, but not at the moment.
Yeah, you're fine for the public portion.
Okay. Just want to double check.
Sure. This is an investigation referred by the Office of the Inspector General involving the Deputy Mayor for Greater Economic Opportunity. According to the OIG's report of investigation, on three occasions in late summer 2015, Ms. Snowden used government resources for other than official business and ordered, directed, or requested subordinate employees to perform personal services in violation of DPM sections 1807.1 B and C. Third non-confidential investigation, 1031-016, In re Antoine Wilson, and 1031-017, In re Jennifer Niles, pursuant to DC Official Code Section 1-1162.12, subsection A, we opened preliminary investigations into whether former Chancellor Antoine Wilson and former Deputy Mayor Jennifer Niles violated the code of conduct by transferring the chancellor's daughter to an out-of-boundary school after the start of school year 2017-2018. The board authorized this as a formal investigation at the last meeting. We have since interviewed both the former chancellor and deputy mayor and several DCPS employees. That concludes my report.
Thank you. We'll now move to the opportunity for a public comment. I will remind the public witnesses that we have a three-minute limit. We'll start with Mr. Sindrum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Michael Sindrum, disabled veteran, served our country more than most. With Mr. Flowers' representation, he indicated a pharmacy dispute, and it was kind of cryptic and garbled. I couldn't quite hear what the particulars were about that, and was there a referral made, if Bega lacks jurisdiction, to the D.C. Board of Medicine pharmacy? Number two, Mr. Flowers made mention of hard copy of the minutes. Does that include memorializing the public input comment, if you will? Number three, there was mention made of a nonprofit credit, $200. I'd like to know what that's about regarding the lobby portion of the presentation. Number four, is now BEGA taking any action to include D.C. government employees of the Public Service Commission? They are exempt as we speak, to my understanding. They should come under your watch. I'd like to know what actions being taken to include them, because that seems to give Public Service Commission D.C. government employees preferential treatment. The last input about the school board, where the student of the chancellor circumvented the lottery and whatnot. What is the status of that investigation? Has there been any findings? And last but not least, Tracy Hughes, no longer with the board, did a yeoman's job. Do we know where follow up or any kind of contact information? And I can repeat any of the questions if you'd like, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Sindrum. I think we're good for now. I will take the last one. We do not have the right to disclose any of Ms. Hughes's personal contact information and won't do so in this forum.
In light of that, I'd like to get my name and my phone number to her. If you do that, that would be helpful.
Let me think about that, Mr. Syndrome, and I'll get back to you.
Okay.
The Public Service Commission, by statute, does not fall under our jurisdiction, and we are doing nothing to change that at the moment. That is beyond the scope of our jurisdiction, as I think we've discussed previously. I will have Mr. Barton address your first question about the advisory opinion issued regarding the pharmacy matter.
Thank you.
Is it on?
I can't hear.
That advisory opinion does appear on our website as a resolution of...
I'm cybernetically challenged, so I have need for you to share with me what that's about. Or the alternative, send me a hard copy, please.
The at issue was a pharmacy's alleged refusal to process a prescription unless it received all of the customers' prescriptions. The Office of Open Government does not have oversight over pharmacies since they're not public bodies, and a referral was made to the complainant to address this matter with the D.C. Board of Pharmacy.
Good.
Thank you, Mr. Barton.
Then, Madam Chair, the nonprofit credit, $200 under the lobby portion presentation.
Mr. Wolfenbarger.
Yes, that is a reference to the difference between the registration fees that are charged to nonprofit organizations, which is $50 per year, versus regular corporations, which are charged $250 per year. So if an entity files a registration with us claiming that they are entitled to nonprofit status, they're charged a $50 registration fee instead of the $250 fee. And the purpose of our audit was to determine whether all the entities that were claiming nonprofit status were entitled to that lower registration fee, and we're still investigating 29 of those.
Is there any provision for exemption totally for nonprofit or any other entity for that matter?
I don't believe so.
Okay. Thank you.
And what were your other questions, Mr. Syndrome?
I believe, the hard copy. Mr. Flowers made mention the minutes. Does that include, not limited to, the public input, public comment?
We have not been capturing the public input on the hard copy minutes, but I think it's a good suggestion, and we'll look at that and try to incorporate the major points that are made.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Flowers. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Syndrome. Have a good day. At this point, I'll entertain a motion to move into executive session to discuss ongoing confidential investigations pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-57B to consult with an attorney to obtain legal advice and to preserve the attorney-client privilege between an attorney and a public body pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-57B-4A to discuss personnel matters including the appointment, employment, assignment, promotion, performance, evaluation, compensation, discipline, demotion, removal, or resignation of government appointees, employees, or officials pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-57B-10, and to deliberate on a decision in which the Ethics Board will exercise quasi-judicial functions pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-575B-13.
Move that we go into
executive session. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, the time is now 10:45. We are in executive session. All right, the time is now 11:32, and we are back on the public record. The board has one matter to report out. The board is making public the formal investigation number 1101-003 in re Jack Evans that was opened on April 5th, 2018. Pending no other matters, the next board meeting will be June 7th at 10 a.m. Thank you.